Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much.
This episode of Us and Them is supported with a grant from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation.
I'm Trey Kay, and from PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting, this is Us and Them. We're the show that tells the stories about the things that divide us. And lately, that's been the coronavirus. For the last couple of months, the pandemic has turned our schools inside out. Classrooms are empty. Teachers turn lessons into online assignments. Parents help students learn at home. Are you keeping up with your schoolwork?
Not really, because I forget about it.
How do you work through the problems you don't understand?
I wait till my mom comes home.
What if this goes on? How would you feel about that?
I wouldn't really like it.
It's graduation season, but ceremonies and celebrations, prom, spring sports, they're all on hold. And it's not just the milestones we're missing. It's also routines. Take school lunch. Across the country, millions of students get two or three meals a day at school. Kids can't learn if they're hungry. So as we look at education during a global pandemic, first a fundamental question. What about the food?
Yeah.
Hey, Megan, what's the first
one? She's gonna buy it.
So I'm standing here in the preparation room. There's a bunch of ovens. There's like a couple big ovens look like, you know, that you would put pizzas in. And it's about half a dozen women with surgical masks on. And they're putting pepperoni rolls into tin foil. Can I just say pepperoni rolls, yum. They're a regional favorite. I'm at Riverside High School in Bell, West Virginia. It's Monday, March 30th, and this is Food Central. They're fixing enough breakfasts and lunch to last 1,100 kids for a week. That's more than 10,000 meals. Everyone, including me, is trying their best to stay apart. That means that my microphone is at the end of a 7-foot boom pole, and we're all wearing masks.
We've always worn gloves when we were preparing food, but not masks. I think everybody's hands are pretty much raw from washing them so much. My name's Marcia Burns, and I'm cafeteria manager at Riverside High School.
Marcia tells me she's stressed. She's worried about her family at home, and she's worried about her family at work.
I just hope nobody gets it.
And she worries about the food supply.
And now it's running low. You know, our distributor is actually running out of food.
And Marcia never knows who will be on hand to prepare it.
We were a couple cooks down because of their immune system. We've got teachers that came in today, and our assistant principal, he came in today to help.
Marcia works two other jobs, as a cook for the Air National Guard and at a gas station. But she takes it easy on Sundays.
I only work 8 hours on Sunday.
She says everyone appreciates her work more since the pandemic.
Right now, with this going on, they can't speak enough about how good that we're doing at this point. And just like that, we became essential. I mean, you know, gas station here, you know, just like that, we became essential.
I think Marcia's really getting at something. Our idea of important work has changed a lot. What's important is keeping people healthy and fed. These days, school lunches take the bus to the kids, and I go along.
Right now, we are currently pulling into Cedar Grove, West Virginia.
My name is Christopher Ring. I'm a school bus operator for Kanawha County Schools, and I drive one of our more rural areas.
Lily, I brought a guest for you today.
I'm not the only passenger. A principal and a counselor are here, too. And they brought treats for the kids.
For you and your brother.
That's where things stood in Kanawha County, West Virginia, in late March. Things have changed. Families still rely on food from school, but now that food comes from private vendors instead of the cafeteria. As for academics, back in March, Kanawha County educators said they had a plan. Students would use iPads to stay in touch with their teachers.
You can not only, it's not only a learning interface, but you can direct message back and forth. So, you know, our teachers...
Riverside High School Assistant Principal Chris Corbett knew internet access could be a problem, so they created hotspots.
A parent can come and sit in the parking lot with their child and they can get the internet that they need. They can download the assignments on their iPad, go back home, take care of them, then maybe come back to submit.
And that system is working for many families. We wanted to know more about how it's going all around the state. Teachers and students say they're doing what they can each day, knowing that they don't have all the answers.
I'm Adrienne Sherrill. I'm a teacher in Randolph County. I teach Spanish at the middle school level.
I've known Adrienne Sherrill for about 8 years. She's a friend of my sister.
No, but I'm looking at your house there, and I realized I've been there before, so...
You have been here before, yeah.
We talked through video chat. As a matter of fact, what you'll hear for the rest of the show is video chat. I asked Adrienne about the day when she realized everything would change.
It was, you know, toward the end of the day where we were told, you know, get your things, shut everything down. We will not be coming back into this building for who knows how long.
Tell me about your kids.
We are a predominantly poor county. We do not have a levy in place, so our students are always at a disadvantage. We have a lot of the opioid epidemic evident in my community. We are a very rural county, and it really shows in our demographic.
Adrienne tells me lots has changed in 6 weeks. At first, it was all hands on deck to make lunches and deliver them by bus every day. Now, a private vendor provides 5 meals a week. The kids each get half a gallon of milk and a half a gallon of juice at various drop-off sites, including Adrienne's school.
One of the real issues we are having is that's a drive-up program. Parents can come up. It's not just for school kids. The way that this funding is set up, it's for parents to take home for all of their children. So if you have a child in your home between 1 and 18 years old, you can utilize the system. The issue is that we don't have good checks and balances in my county. So we are seeing parents who come up and say, I have 5 kids I need meals for. They will take 5 kids worth of meals, and then they will come back a little later and they'll get 5 more of those. Or they'll go to another drop site for meals and get them there. I don't know if that is showing the desperate need for food in those homes, which I know that is happening some right now, or if it's just the desire to take. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there.
So Adrienne, I guess I'd like to know, how is learning happening?
That's a great question. And I think there's a lot of variation in how learning is happening. Technology is so limited in my county that this is such a new experience for us. We have teachers who go home and don't have the internet at their houses. So that is such a significant thing that we have teachers who who cannot go home and stay connected through the internet in their own homes. That's a big deal. That's teachers. That's not just students.
Adrian's Randolph County middle schoolers do not have iPads or Chromebooks. In fact, she says 30 to 40% of them don't even have internet at home. So teachers like Adrian are making paper packets for those kids.
The question is, what do you do with that work if it's possibly contaminated in the end? Do you bring it in and have, you know, we've had teachers say, oh, the fire department will sanitize it for us, or we should, you know, we should go through this process. We don't even know how we're going to properly collect that work. We don't know how we're going to grade that work. I know out of 138 students right now, I've only heard from about 25 of them. So I'm not getting feedback from my own students.
Adrian says in some neighborhoods, the challenges are even more serious.
I will tell you, in the last week and a half in my neighborhood, I've made 11 911 calls because of issues of violence out in the streets, because of problems. People are isolated, and isolation leads to more drug use. We know that. And the kids that are in these homes are already struggling. They're already suffering. But now they're in those homes and they can't go anywhere. They're trapped. So the biggest concern is, not only are they not being fed, are they not being nurtured, but what are the bad consequences? What are the really bad consequences?
To me, it sounds like you teachers in this particular situation, you're kind of like a triage unit at a MASH hospital or something like that, where you're just trying to make the best, you're trying to make the best out of the circumstances that you have.
I'm sorry, I'm tearing up a little bit because that's a pretty good example.
Adrian says she doesn't want her kids to worry about their schoolwork. She just wants them to be okay and stay engaged with the outside world, even when it's hard. And can you tell me who's gathered with you in the kitchen today? Just tell me who's there.
At this point, I have my wife, my five children, and my mother is all here at the kitchen table right now.
Okay, that sounds great.
I was really glad to connect with Eli Snell and his family, and it took some doing. Their farm is in the remote part of West Virginia's Eastern Panhandle, close to Maryland. With no internet access and spotty phone connections, we talked on a landline from a relative's house nearby. Eli and his wife raise cattle, and lately help their five kids, ages 9 through 17, with their schoolwork. Who's a better teacher, your mom or your dad?
My mom.
This is Bela, and she's the baby of the family, a third grader. And are you keeping up with your schoolwork?
Not really, because, like, I forget about it.
Hello?
Who's this?
Caleb.
Caleb is in the fourth grade. And he says he might want to be a NASA engineer. Do you ever get worried that this time out of school may be making it harder for you to reach your goal?
Yeah, probably. I just don't get enough work done per day. Sometimes I don't even work at all a day.
A while back, their router broke, and they lost their internet connection. This is Amy Snell, the kid's mom.
They are at a disadvantage because they're not getting the education that they need. I feel like a failure every day because I'm not providing the education that I know that my children were getting at school.
I mean, at first, you know, I really enjoyed not being in school and, you know, having all this time free. Then you realize, like, well, you get sick of it because, I mean, it's like every day, you know, the same, and you never know what day it is, and it's boring.
That's 17-year-old Anthony. He's a junior at Moorfield High School. Besides being bored, he's been frustrated because he needs the internet for his Spanish class.
And I had to use the internet. I had to use the internet no matter how I got. I had to use the internet to like look up translations and stuff, and because I could not do that work on my own.
So he's joined the younger kids competing for online time at their grandparents' house nearby. The kids also use paper packets their parents pick up from school, a month's worth of assignments. Amy says the first packet was demanding and frustrating. The second one, the one they're working on right now, is a little better.
They are project-based, a lot of outside activities. It doesn't require as much internet. I mean, I can give you some of the examples of things that are on their packet.
Sure, let's hear that.
Okay, plant something. Plant a flower seed or something for your garden. Keep a weekly record of the plant's growth. Include illustrations to show how the seeds change from time. There's some in measuring. So you can measure your rooms in your house. You can measure objects in your house. One is to build a bird feeder.
Those sound like some good assignments, if you ask me.
So a lot of these things are actually hands-on and really fun for our kids. To visit a stream or pond, that one hits home for us. We live on the stream. We live on the river. We have a pond. So we've done this one multiple times. We gathered tadpoles out of a mud puddle the other day and set up an aquarium with our kids, and now we're watching them grow. We took them mushroom hunting where we have never found a morel on this farm. We found 120 that day.
Oh, don't you shouldn't say that too loud, or I shouldn't.
I shouldn't.
That.
We will have poachers here.
There are two more kids in the family. 17-year-old Gage says he's an introvert and a musician. He prefers studying at home because he says school is stressful. 7th grader Dane says he misses his friends, but not school, because school is hard. What kind of projects do you like doing at home?
I don't know, like going on a hike and, listen to the radio, watch the news, read a newspaper, or look at news on the internet and select something that happened and then summarize it.
When you do that, do you feel like you're learning something?
Yeah.
Like, what are you learning?
Like, what happens all around the world, and like, what's happening.
Do you feel like you need school? If you can just turn on the radio and go do projects around the farm?
You do need school, because you need your education in here. It's not as good as a school would do it, but...
How do you think missing this much school will affect going into the 8th grade?
I just will be behind on some of the stuff I did in school.
Like, what do you think you'll be behind on?
Like math, social studies, English language.
The five kids all sound like they're taking it a day at a time. They aren't looking too far ahead. But their parents do worry about the future. What if this is the new normal?
We've talked about that a lot, actually, and my husband and I feel like we're really going to have to step our game up if we're going to teach our children, and we'll just have to get more creative and find ways to keep our children focused and for us to stay focused and find ways to educate them. You know, we always say there's a time to thrive and there's a time to survive, and right now I feel like we're on the time to survive.
We knew we'd need to be creative and use new ways to tell the story. So we asked students, parents, and teachers to record voice memos about how the pandemic has changed things. A young man in Fayette County starts his recording with some dates in history that mean a lot to him. He mentions the landings of the Mayflower, the first slave ship, the Civil War, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech.
Another year that everybody's going to remember. It's 2020, the year I graduate. I'm a senior at Oak Hill High School. My name is Josiah Baker. Obviously, this coronavirus is really impacting the end of my senior year. Interrupted prom, it's interrupted graduation. Of course, it kind of hurts, but on the bright side, we have technology. The internet has improved the world in a way that we've pretty much been able to live off of it these past few weeks that we've been off from school. It keeps me busy during the day, you know, when I take breaks from my work. You know, I've got Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. I'm dealing with this coronavirus pretty well. I've got asthma, so I've basically just been in the house for weeks. It's nothing too big that I can't handle. And I've dealt with a lot of trauma in my family, in my own personal life, but I'm making it through, getting through, and life is good. Thank God every day for my life.
There's a lot of wisdom in Josiah's words. I was curious to talk with other people in Fayette County in South Central West Virginia. So I was thrilled to hear from Tiga Tony, an 11th and 12th grade social studies teacher. Tiga knows Josiah Baker, the young man that we just heard from. She says Josiah is tough and smart, and she knows he's doing okay. She's less sure about some of her other students, and part of her worry comes from seeing where these students live.
We put the meals on the buses, and we just ran the bus routes, and teachers were on those bus routes. And at one point, we were going door to door. And so we were seeing a lot of kids that way, and it was enough to break your heart. But being able to
why did it break your heart?
Some kids just come from homes that, you know, parents are struggling, and they don't have a lot of resources available to them on a normal day. And now much less with what we have going on. You know, I have kids that their parents don't have a reliable vehicle. So getting to the grocery store is probably going to be a challenge for them. I have kids whose parents are unemployed at the moment. And so kids really needed that meal, that meal program. And we, I think, needed to go see those kids. So, we both benefited from that.
Tiga says in recent weeks, she has not heard anything from about half of her students. Why do you think they're not getting back to you?
We have a lot of kids who live back in rural areas of this county, and we have a high poverty rate. A lot of kids don't have internet, and a lot of places it's spotty.
When you're telling me that you're not connecting with 50% of them, on one hand, I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe they're like me, and it's like, yeah, I'm not in school, I'm not doing that. And then the other part would be they are actually doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They're staying at home, and they're in a place where that they can communicate and fend for themselves, but they cannot really connect with the outside world. Which do you think it is?
Honestly, you know, when you're talking about high school kids, it's probably a little bit of both. Yeah.
What is it like interacting with kids at that level and to have something like this happen?
You know, it's really hard. That's a hard question. That's hard to talk about. Because really when I get kids in their 11th and 12th grade years, I get them when they're leaving the nest. And so I get them when they're closing the chapter of childhood and opening the chapter of young adulthood, and all the things that come along with that. And, you know, especially this time of year, the last part of the year, it's a time when teachers and students can kind of relax a little bit, let our hair down, talk to one another, you know, figure out what they want to do with their future, what their plans are, conversations that, you know, during the grind of the school year, we don't really get around to, but towards the end of the school year, you can do that a little more. Right. And so we're kind of missing out on that time. As a person who teaches 11th and 12th grade kids at such a crucial and precious age, really, I feel a little robbed of being able to have those conversations with my kids, have that closure with my kids, right, especially the older ones.
I've talked with lots of teachers and families over these past few weeks, and I realize everyone experiences this awful pandemic differently, even though we're all going through it together. We share the same stress of uncertainty. We can't make plans. We can't even hug each other. And teachers worry about students who don't respond. The one thing we do have in common, we're trying to figure out how to make the best of this. For one family, the pandemic has had a surprising effect.
The focus is family time. The three of us really connect in a different way. It just seems to be much more enjoyable.
After a break, we'll hear just why they appreciate their time together. I'm Trey Kay, and this is Us and Them. Our show is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation. This episode is supported with a grant from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
Hi, Trey here. And you're listening to Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX. We're looking at a divide that's become much more evident in the past couple of months. Families and students with access to the internet and those without. Students without internet connections struggled to complete their schoolwork, and teachers are less able to keep in touch with them. The situation is different from county to county. In Kanawha County, students are used to technology. They get iPads to take home. Internet access is spotty in places, but not terrible. But what if you're not used to technology?
Just first names, and we won't mention the county that we live in. For the express purpose that Jaden is home alone during the day, so we don't want to advertise where we are.
This is Karen. She works for a large healthcare provider in a small West Virginia county. Her husband is an over-the-road trucker who's gone most of the time. They are both essential workers, and their son is 12. Very 12.
Hello.
Hey, Jaden. My name's Trey.
Okay.
Okay. So, can you tell me what grade are you in?
I'm in sixth.
Do you like school?
Yeah.
Do you miss having the teacher, having interaction with the teachers?
Yeah, sometimes.
If it's sometimes, tell me what that's like.
I don't know how to do this, so I just, like, skip to the next question or something like that. And
How do you figure it out? I mean, like, do you wait till your mom comes home, or how do you work through the problems you don't understand?
I wait till my mom comes home.
I might have some other questions I want to ask you in a minute, but let me talk to your mom again right now.
Okay. Hi, I'm back.
Karen tells me she and Jaden make to-do lists each night for the next day. That's because she leaves for work before he gets up. Each day, Jaden works through written assignments from school. Then there's Karen's list. She has him read something he likes and write a summary paragraph. Then there's a chore to do and something creative.
And then getting in some sort of exercise. And then after those things are done, he has free time, and we kind of had to loosen the rules, quote unquote, with that. If he does 3 or 4 hours on his Xbox, that has to be okay right now.
I ask Jaden how he finds the discipline to do his work before he gets on the Xbox. It turns out his dad unlocks it remotely when he hears Jaden's work is done. But it also turns out unlocking schoolwork on the iPad is trickier. A lot of times, Jaden has trouble logging in. And when he does, it's confusing.
Not being able to sign in is the biggest issue. And they have, each class has, it's called Canvas. And you check in, you answer a couple of questions, you know, are you and your family okay? Is anyone sick? Do you need anything? Questions like that to really try to engage. But if you can't sign in on the iPad, then you're not able, of course, to, you know, give that feedback. And I know it's frustrating to them and to the students as well.
For Karen and Jaden, the confusion is figuring out the multiple programs he needs to do his work.
The problem with this is he's not adept at using one program into the other. There might be a review in one program, and then you go over and you take the test in another program, and you submit screenshots of written homework in another program. In ordinary circumstances, of course, the kids are better at tech than their parents almost all the time, but it seems like it's just kind of jumbled right now, not very streamlined, and that's frustrating to them.
Right.
So we just, you know, fix dinner and go about the work. But I would rather, I mean, that is together time, but I would rather have some one-on-one time because he's lonely through the day. And I do think that the assignments as they are sending them is really based on having someone at home and having a homeschooling environment. And not all kids have parents at home during this time. And a lot of the folks that I know, you know, in town, both parents are essential workers, and that limits the time that they can help with these things. However, his teachers have been very accommodating when I share that. But it's a lot of work. And if you don't have, you know, all afternoon to work with the student, it's almost insurmountable.
Are you a little easier on, you know, getting down to the work, the homework or the schoolwork than you may be during the regular school year, the regular school time?
Absolutely. I'm more relaxed in that. For one thing, we're, you know, not eating out any longer. So we have that time where we prepare dinner together. And we found that we really like, you know, trying new recipes and things like that. But sometimes we just, that gets pushed to the side. We go over what he was able to do. And if there's, you know, a portion of a worksheet that he didn't understand, we'll go on and complete that worksheet. So it, you know, he's done and that can be behind him. But I'm usually very scheduled and, you know, some might call OCD. I've really had to fight that urge that's not what he needs. He does have, you know, like we talked about the things that he needs to do every day, but how he does that in which order and how much time he allots to it is up to him because he has to have some sort of control in a situation that you really have very little controls.
If I were to speak with your husband, mm-hmm. what would he say about what we're talking about?
First and foremost, he would say that he's proud of us because he kind of gets the summary at night when we talk on the phone and he does, you know, he does know our frustrations but we also share, you know, the best part of our days too.
How do you think your life is going to change when we get the all clear signal?
You know, I hope it doesn't change very much. And I know that might sound silly, but we've really, even though there's frustrations and uncertainties, we've really kind of settled into something different within my family, especially, but even the community. We're not all rushing around, and we're not at McDonald's on the way to you know, basketball practice or whatever. There's more cooking at home, and the focus is family time. And I've even noticed that when my husband is in on the weekends, the three of us really connect in a different way. And the things that we do together are, it just seems to be much more enjoyable because it's simpler.
I am Ashley Setterstrom. I'm a special education social studies teacher at Chandler Academy.
Ashley Setterstrom teaches high school right here where I am located in Kanawha County. But of course, we spoke over video chat.
Chandler Academy is our county's alternative school. It is where the expulsions go, or the habitual violators, so to speak. They're special ed, and they're not expelled, and they get reviewed every 45 days. It just depends on the situation. If you ask any of us who work at Chandler, we would tell you that it's a place for intervention. But, you know, you ask just about anybody else, and they tell you that it's a place for punishment.
Ashley tells me when students get sent to Chandler, they take their iPads away. With the school shutdown, they got them back for distance learning, but that doesn't mean they use them. Ashley says fewer than 5% of her students show up for online classes.
There are so many moving parts to the reasons why we're not able to communicate with all of our students. Some of them just don't want to. Some of them do not have that support at home. So they don't have that person pushing them. You know, my kids, when they're in my classroom, they know the routine. You know, one kid, like, I know, it's procedures. I already know what you're going to say. And we do our little back and forth every day. But he bucks up. He takes his seat and he gets his stuff done because the expectation is there and I'm right there in front of him. And without me, he isn't going to do that.
What do you think he is doing?
I know what he's doing. Oh, bless his heart. I hope he's staying home is what I hope he's doing. But, you know, these kids, you know, their parents sometimes can't wrangle them any better than what we can.
Ashley says at first it was tempting to blame the parents, but she's learned that many of them are in dire straits.
We left for spring break, and we were going to come back from spring break, and we were going to knock out this last 9 weeks, and it's like our kids were just ripped away from us. And now we're scrambling, and we're worried. Like, breaks are cool and all, but we also worry a lot about our kids when those breaks come, when Thanksgiving break, Christmas break, spring break, and Lord have mercy, summer. I always cry on the last day of school before summer. I'm like, what are they going to do? And right now it's just one of them times, like, I'm telling myself, they came back from Thanksgiving break. They came back from Christmas break. Like, they're going to come back after two. Like, they survived those. They're going to survive this.
And what's your fear? What's your fear of not connecting with them? What, you know, what's at stake?
A lot of our kids struggle with mental health issues, or they have short tempers, or they are in unstable environments at home. You know, when they're coming to school, as soon as I look at them, I know if something is wrong or if they're doing okay today. And it's the not knowing is the hardest part, not having any communication with them at all whatsoever. Because we always think the worst, and especially when things are out of our control. You know, when my kids are with me, I can tell immediately that, okay, it's time for a hall talk. You know, I need to check on this one. I need to see what's going on. Do I need to refer them to a counselor? And it's just not having that ability anymore. And I'm constantly talking myself out of imagining the worst.
Wow.
Ashley says the kids with the worst behavior at her school used to have the best attendance. She takes that to mean they really need her and the structure school provides. Now, when she does reach a student, she suggests this. Do one subject at a time. Science on Monday, social studies on Tuesday, math on Wednesday, English on Thursday. Friday is for electives. Make a list. Don't get overwhelmed. You just told me that your students, you have students who need intervention. You told me that right now, with this disruption, that you maybe at best connecting with 20% of your students. And that's after you've had three quarters of the school year. What if the school year starts off this way? I would think that would be rough going.
It would be, and I hope that that's not the case. And you know, should it be the case, then I'll do what I did when all of this started. You know, I will get my class roster. I will go down the list. I will call parent after parent and introduce myself and make myself available and keep on chipping away at it day after day with those phone calls. That's all that I can control. And yeah, I cannot dwell on the things that I cannot control.
Ashley Sederstrom's students at the Chandler Academy are a particularly vulnerable population during the pandemic. They need a special kind of approach in the classroom. And right now, Ashley says it's tough to know how to connect with them. An actual classroom works better for other kids, too, like students at technical high schools who need hands-on practice to graduate and get their skills certified. We wanted to know how virtual learning works for them.
I am Emily Tansey, and I teach English to high school students at a technical high school here in Morgantown, West Virginia. It's called MTEC, or Monongahela County Technical Education Center. I have students in seven different technical education programs at the high school. So some of them are students in culinary. Some are in the health occupations fields, like medical assisting and dental assisting, pharmacy technicians. They chose to go to a technical high school to get away from traditional learning and to do hands-on learning and simulated workplace and clinical hours.
Emily teaches high school juniors and seniors. She feels especially bad for the seniors. They're missing prom and a graduation ceremony. They had plans. They were going to go to college or the military or into the workforce.
So it's kind of beyond just can they get certified, and now into what is their future going to look like.
So teacher, what do you say? What do you say to them?
I tell them I don't have the answers. And I try to be as optimistic as possible with them. I always tell them to research and to reach out to people that might have the answers. So they have to be the one to go find that connection. You know, they have to go through their program director. They have to look at the National Health Occupations website. But I do try to remind them that, you know, the world isn't ending just because everything is at a standstill. They will have opportunities in the future, and they need to just take this time to learn as much as they can in whatever way they can and not freak out. And that's really hard to convince a 17 or an 18-year-old not to freak out.
But I guess the question that I have, I mean, I've heard some people say that, you know, what they're told by their county is that they just want to keep them busy. It's almost like just keep them mentally active for a while and for, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day. And that's almost the best that you can handle. And then I kind of think, well, okay, well, if you kind of take away that the motivation, the force, the thing that really kind of keeps you on task, and yet you don't want to create more stress. So it seems like it's a delicate balance.
It definitely is. That's why I have found with my seniors, they are working towards this like digital portfolio that is highlighting all the work they've done for the year as a way to kind of celebrate that. And it gives them something that they can send out to potential employers. So it has a purpose, even though I might just be checking off a box. And then with my students who are 11th graders, they have very open-ended journal prompts that I give them. They can do things like watch Netflix and write a review, or they can just journal about their everyday life. And I think having something like that that's really open-ended, the motivation is more intrinsic. It's more about what they want to do because they see it as a perceived choice.
So if a kid is binging on Netflix and they are writing about it, like maybe a kid that you couldn't reach and all of a sudden they just really are very interested and they kind of open their soul and write to you about what that is they experience on Netflix. And do you also have the kids like, yeah, it's good?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. But it's funny because I feel like I've gotten to know more about my students. I had one that has been reviewing like YouTube channels that I've never heard of before. And he like reviewed this history Civil War YouTube channel. And it was so boring, but he loved it. So it's like, okay, you know what? If that's his thing, then I can connect with him and I can respond back and be like, hey, I'm going to check this out. So it's been interesting.
Maybe even broaden your mind a little bit from what they know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say some of them have really taken that personal choice and gone further into like their program of study. And I promised my one student, she was too embarrassed to read what I wanted her to read, but I wanted to share with you a little bit about what she's been doing. She is a student who's studying culinary, and she has been taking this time to try out different recipes. She has binge-watched MasterChef, and she's also come up with 4 different restaurant concepts for her future restaurants she wants to have. And I'll read this to you. She said, "This time I decided to plan a gastropub named Mountain Mama after a lyric from Country Roads as an homage to my home state. It will feature menu items that can be found in West Virginia." And I love that.
You can probably tell by the way she talks that Emily is trying her best to stay positive. She points to a major sign of success. She's in touch with almost all her students. Monongalia County makes sure all students have Chromebooks, and they start using apps early. Emily is a millennial. She grew up with technology, and she's been showing her fellow teachers how to go all digital, even making them video tutorials. She set up a Google Voice line to text with her students so they can vent or leave her messages. What would you suggest into the office of lessons learned from this experience?
Ooh, okay. So I think one thing that really made us all scramble at first was making connections. And I know everyone knows that teaching best practice is to reach out to parents early and often, because if there's ever an issue, you've already established that contact. And I knew that when I taught younger kids. But with older ones, you kind of get used to just talking to the student about their work and their problems. You don't reach out to the parents as often. So I think going forward, I'm going to make sure I have parent cell phone numbers and email addresses. I used to be so worried about giving out personal information to kids. And that's one of the things that we're actually told not to do. But the pandemic's really kind of changed that. We're no longer just somebody at a school building. We are a resource to them no matter where we are. And I think having that open communication is something we need to do more of in the future. And obviously be appropriate with it. You know, I don't want kids to text me at, you know, 2 a.m, some stupid meme or something. But if they have that Google Voice number they can call or email or text, that I think would be great moving forward, because they'll know I'm there for them.
Are there going to be positive byproducts to this experience of dealing with COVID with regard to education?
Yeah, I think so. I think that One of the things that teachers have been asking for a long time is autonomy of our classrooms. Let us teach the standards in the way that best serves our students and best fits our personalities. And I think we're going to see more of that and less micromanaging, because teachers are figuring it out in their homes on their own, figuring out ways to teach material that they've never had to think of before. You know, maybe our governmental agencies like the state legislature maybe will start to respect us more because they see how much work we're putting in and how we're able to troubleshoot to best help our kids. And then on the local, like smaller level, I think that administrators are going to start trusting in their teachers a little bit more.
Why do you think they will?
Because we're making it work.
Now, don't get me wrong. It hasn't been any easier for Emily than anyone else. She says she's an extrovert and a musician. She misses people a lot. She worries about some of her students who don't have internet or a smartphone, and a few who might not be getting good support at home. To make this report, I spoke with many people in various parts of West Virginia. And one thing that surprised me, I didn't hear a lot of negativity or bad-mouthing of the system from students, parents, teachers, or administrators. Everyone seemed full of a let's figure this out spirit. They all seemed to have a very practical sense of the world they're living in right now. They understood it's not anybody's fault, that it's not within anybody's control to wave a wand and make things go back to the way they were. They also understand that we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but that we need to get through this in one piece. And maybe it won't be pretty and perfect, but we'll get through this. And then we'll have a story to tell future generations about a time when kids had to go to school and couldn't do their work from the couch in their pajamas. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode is me, Trey Kay, Lori Stern, and Kate Smith. Special thanks to Superintendent Ronald During and Child Nutrition Director Diane Miller of Kanawha County Schools for making it possible for us to observe the preparation and delivery of student meals. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. Lelena Price helps us with images for the web. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and the CRC Foundation. This episode is supported with a grant from the Claude Worthington Benedict Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.